present and ready to call the meeting to order.
Thank you very much. Welcome everyone to the City Council meeting for Tuesday, May 12th, 2020. Can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember Varnage?
Here.
Councilmember Paulding?
Here.
Councilmember George?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Storton?
Here.
And Mayor Ray Russom?
Here. Would you please join me in a moment of reflection? Thank you. And due to the delay issues with teleconferencing, it is my turn to do the flag salute. So will you please proudly follow along in your heads with me? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. For just some added things that we add into our agendas under agenda review with this teleconferencing, if you are new to listening to this at home, a reminder to the people who are on the call, please don't forget to mute when you're not speaking. Also, try to remember to identify yourself each time you speak. We know each other's names, but the people at home may not. And we tried last meeting to not go in a particular order when asking questions. I'm going to do it a little differently tonight. So at Councilmember Barnage's suggestion, tonight I'll be going in reverse order when I call on you. So that will add a little bit more order to tonight's meeting. A reminder that all votes are roll call votes because we can't see each other. And a reminder to the public that when we're getting towards your item that you might like to speak on, go ahead and call in at the start of the item and get into the queue so that we can be ready to hear from you when it comes time for public comment. So with that, that takes us to item five. We have no closed session announcements tonight. So for brevity, I'll move that all ordinance presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
Second by Councilmember Barnage.
Any discussion? Okay, Clerk Wetmore, can we get a roll call, please?
Mayor Ray Russom?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnage?
Yes.
Councilmember Paulding?
Yes.
Councilmember George?
Yes.
And Mayor Pro Tem Storton?
Yes.
Thank you, everyone. That takes us to item six. This is special presentations and our new standing item 6A. This is an update regarding countywide COVID-19 efforts. And I will go ahead and throw it over to Acting City Manager Chris Robeson.
Thank you, Mayor Ray Russom and council members. Good evening. This is Bill Robeson, Acting City Manager. Whitney and I, the acting deputy city manager, have been talking about this topic pretty consistently throughout the days. And there are not a lot of changes at this point, but I will hand it over to her to give a little bit more information. We have had some updates recently, but I'll allow Whitney to take over at that and give you that information. Thank you.
Thank you. This is Whitney McDonald, your acting deputy city manager, and I'll just go through a few points largely related to the county's efforts at this point in response to the coronavirus. First off, I just wanted to, for anybody who's listening, just remind folks of where they could go for additional information about the county's shelter-at-home order, as well as the ways in which we are implementing the state's order. The easiest information access is at readyslow.org. That's where all the county's orders and interpretations are available there. The county has a general information number to call if there are any questions about the order and also about the way that the state's order is being implemented here in the county. The best number there is 543-2444. They also have an enforcement line. That number is 788-2222. And in Arroyo Grande, we also have an enforcement hotline for issues that are coming up within the city. That phone number is 473-5404. And so if there are questions that come up, if there are any answers that we can provide, we do work closely with the county to help implement the order within the city and to answer questions as we can for any businesses that are perhaps looking at both the county and state orders and trying to figure out how to get things moving or how to make sure we're being compliant. So turning to our main talking points, people probably have seen or may have seen in the news that the county has decided to kind of pivot from the START plan that it announced a little over about a week and a half ago and instead really implement the state's resilience roadmap. So essentially using the state's plan rather than the county START plan. And this came up after it was determined that the state was essentially not going to allow the county to move forward with its START plan beginning on Friday as we had hoped. And so just to remind everybody, the state will determine when and how each county may reopen based on the county's ability to meet a set of certain criteria, and these criteria relate to essentially epidemiological statistics and measures for readiness to address outbreaks and public health concerns. And so the county submitted what is called an attestation to the governor's office describing how we are prepared to proceed fully into stage two of the state's resilience roadmap. And so I'm sure people have heard that the governor declared on Friday that we were ready to move as a state into stage two. Stage two is most likely going, it is being implemented in phases, even though it in itself, I suppose, is a phase. So we are essentially in stage 2A, I suppose we could call it that. And under the current order, state's order, it does not allow personal care businesses such as hair salons or in-person religious services to occur, nor does it allow for dining in restaurants. And those are differences from the county's, what we were calling phase one of the START plan versus the state's phase two of their resilience roadmap. So at this stage, those activities are continuing to be not allowed. So essentially, we're not allowed to have personal care businesses, dining in restaurants, or religious services, in-person religious services still. We're waiting to be notified if the state will accept our attestation of readiness to begin stage two and move forward to allow in-store retail and in-restaurant dining to reopen, along with certain physical distancing and certain protective measures. So that's something that the county has requested that the state allow us to do, and we are now waiting for the state to make a final determination or to see if we might be able to move forward. Local retail establishments are now allowed to be open with curbside pickup under the state's rules, along with associated manufacturing and logistics related to retail. Any local establishments that were allowed to remain open under the county's shelter-at-home order will still be allowed to remain open. So for some time, the county has been allowing brick-and-mortar retail to be open as long as products were being picked up at curbside, and so this is essentially going to continue under the state's stage two. The state's resilience roadmap is available online for anybody who wants to take a look, and there is a mechanism to fill out a survey and provide some feedback to the state. That's available at covid19.ca.gov. And in terms of the county's shelter at home order, it is currently set to expire on May 16th, and then the county would just fall under the state's existing orders at that point in time. At least that's what is currently set in place. So when, if and when the state determines that we are allowed to reopen in stages, the county will use the START guide to supplement the state's resilience roadmap. So essentially, we're going to use the START plan as a mechanism to give us some more details as we move forward, as additional sectors are allowed to start operating. If people have had a chance to take a look at the START plan, it does include a number of really helpful guidelines for certain business sectors, and it gives a lot of really helpful information about best practices to keep both the public and your workers safe. And so I think the county is going to continue utilizing that, as I think a number of local businesses and government entities, like the city, for instance, will be using portions of the guidelines in the START plan as we start to implement the reopening ourselves. And then the last item I wanted to hit on was that there are now two state-sponsored testing clinics that are open in the county. One is in Grover Beach, and the other one is in Paso Robles. They are available by appointment between the hours of 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. You can make an appointment online via readyslow.org or by phone, and that phone number is 888-634-1123. And so those are now new testing facilities that are available to the public in addition to what was previously available through private clinics, doctor's offices, and urgent care facilities. So I think I will leave it at that. And if there's anything else, that any questions that I can answer or anyone else, we do have our fire chief, Chief Lieberman, is on the phone, as well as our police chief, Beau Pryor, is available to answer questions from council or the public as we move forward. And with that, I think I will leave it there and kick it off to perhaps Mayor Ray Rusum if she's got anything to add.
The only thing I will add is some information about some league efforts, which are not off the subject, but I want to give the council a chance to ask questions based on the whole bunch of information that Acting Deputy City Manager McDonald just gave us. So I'll ask the council now if they have questions. Councilmember Storton, any questions?
Yes, thank you. I just had one. I was curious if you were fielding many calls from citizens asking for help with clarification of the rules and procedures.
Thank you. I can try to offer an answer to that. Again, this is Whitney McDonald, Acting Deputy City Manager. We have gotten a few calls, but not perhaps as many as we suspected. I think most of the calls came in on Friday when we had been hoping that we would get, you know, really great, clear information coming from the state. And so we did field a couple of questions about what it meant for retail if changes were being made to allow people to go in stores. And we checked with the county to make sure that our interpretation was correct, that that the retail businesses were essentially allowed to continue operating as they had been previously. So if they were an essential business, then they could be open in the same way. But if they were not, then they could do curbside pickup of product, but no in-store shopping. That's mainly the level of questions that we've gotten so far.
Okay, thank you. That's all I have.
Councilmember Paulding, any questions?
I have no questions, but I really appreciate the update. Thank you very much.
Councilmember George, any questions?
Thank you. I have no questions tonight.
Councilmember Barnidge, any questions?
Just one question. Whitney, did anyone contact you. I mean, I know Councilmember Storton asked a similar question. I guess I'm wondering about the retail. Did any retail establishments, do you know if they started operating and if they opened for curbside pickup that weren't open in the past this last Friday with the changes? Anyone in Arroyo Grande that you know of businesses?
I'm not certain, other than we got a request from one business in the village asking for potentially an additional curbside pickup parking spot. So I don't know if they had been open previously or if maybe they'd seen that, you know, with this change from the governor that, you know, maybe now they were ready to be open. And I'm not certain. That was Carol's gift in the village. So we were asked about trying to find ways to help businesses with additional curbside pickup. And so we are certainly looking at those options going forward. And at least to help, you know, make sure we were starting to brainstorm to make sure that we're providing the level of support that we can as things start to reopen.
Okay, and then that brings up another question. If businesses are interested in being opening back up with curbside pickup and they're not right now, what is the best way for business owners to contact the city for help or clarification? Would it be an email that you can share?
Yes, I think that either the enforcement phone number, so 473-5404 is a good phone number. But also, questions could be sent to shelter@home@arroyogrande.org, and questions can come in that way. Otherwise, they can be directed to me, which is my email address is wmcdonald@arroyogrande.org.
Okay, thanks so much, Whitney.
Mayor Ray Russ.
Oh, sir.
Excuse me, can I add a couple of questions that I've received, actually several. This is Bill Robeson, Acting City Manager. Sheridan and I have been fielding quite a few questions about the courts over at the rec center near Soto Sports Complex. And they're mainly about tennis being allowed back in operation. So we looked into that, and the county has allowed some courts in Napomo to be open. And Avila Bay Club, that's a private club, but they've allowed those courts to become operational again. Some of the cities are also allowing their courts to open. So we are anticipating opening those courts for tennis and most likely pickleball this coming Monday. There will be stipulations or criteria that we're going to set forth to remind people of safe distancing and sanitizing the handles and anything that's touched a lot. And so just wanted to update your council on that since we've had probably 7 to 10 calls on that in the past week. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Again, this is Mayor Ray Russom, and I just wanted to add in that the League of Cities is putting together a coalition, and some of you may have received the email today, that the intent of that coalition is a statewide push to work with the league to ask the state for fiscal relief for cities. And in particular, they're asking especially that cities under 50,000 be included in relief efforts, which as of now they have not. And there is no city in San Luis Obispo County that is more than 50,000. So that means all of San Luis County has so far been left out of CARES Act federal monies and certainly state monies. The May revise comes out on Thursday with the governor. I do not expect, or the league does not expect, that there'll be any money for cities at that time. But the league is going to have a really big push in the next 2 months to put a coalition together to really put pressure not only on the state of California but on the federal government to help out cities. So I wanted to let you know
so that when you begin receiving those emails, to keep an eye out for those. They're going to ask us to engage with groups like our public safety unions, our Chamber of Commerce, et cetera, and really trying to build a solid coalition of people that are asking for help for cities like ours. So I won't go through the whole question group, but does anyone have any questions based on what I just said? Okay, so at this time, let's go ahead and open it up to public comment. So if you've heard anything or you want to comment on, this is on COVID-19 efforts or anything related to COVID-19, the call number is 833-493-5844. And at this time, I'll ask City Clerk Wetmore if there's anybody on the line who wants to speak on item 6A.
Yes, we have one caller, Lori Rawls. You're on the line.
Hi. Good evening, Mayor Mae Russom, City Council members, and staff. Thank you for your tireless work during this pandemic and for hearing the voice of our community through public comment. On April 20th, the SLO County Board of Supervisors submitted a letter to the governor asking him to reopen our economy ahead of the state. At that time, we had only 126 cases. We have added 101 cases since that letter was penned just 3 weeks ago, bringing us up to 227 cases. As of today, our COVID case per capita is only 80 per 100,000. Kern, Kings, and Tulare counties make up a good majority of our visitors. Their cases per capita are 143, 208, and 249, respectively. They have skyrocketed in just this last week. The next 3 months are peak tourist seasons for our county, particularly the five cities. We are the vacation destination of choice for surrounding counties. This Sunday, I went to Old West Cinnamon Rolls, and I observed over 63 people waiting in line, not socially distanced, and only five of them were wearing masks. Bonsgrover Beach is the highest profiting grocery store in the entire division. We are the destination grocery store for the rapidly approaching influx of tourists from neighboring counties. My store director maintains the position that he will not enforce CDC guidelines without being empowered by a government mandate. Social distancing is difficult throughout the store, impossible at checkout, and face coverings are not required as posted. Regular hand washing is not supported for checkers, and limits are not being enforced on store capacity. I have exhausted all avenues with respect to this, including pleas to our County Board of Supervisors at their last two meetings and reporting violations to the Health Department's COVID hotline with zero response. There are many cities, counties, and entire states who have fully embraced the CDC guidelines, which states that one of the primary ways COVID-19 is spread is through the droplets and aerosols released when people cough, sneeze, and during close conversations. The CDC further states that wearing face coverings is effective in slowing the spread of COVID-19 and should be worn in the presence of others, especially where social distancing is unattainable. My colleagues and most frontline workers are proud to serve our communities, but not to the detriment of our health. We have unmasked customers 2 to 3 feet from our faces all day long. We want to go home to our families healthy too, and some of us have high-risk loved ones. We are asking you to exercise your authority to protect us now. We have worked hard as a community to flatten the curve, and we are overdue to open up. But we should do so cautiously, using every tool in our belt to keep our case counts low. It would be a shame for us to open up, only to expose our own community, end up with a spike in cases, and have to close back down. For this reason, I fully support and appreciate the City of Pismo Beach's consideration of an ordinance requiring face coverings in public buildings. The City of Grover Beach has indicated at their last meeting that they will also consider an ordinance if Pismo passes theirs. It is my hope that all of the five cities will unify in this effort. It is both appropriate and necessary. Thank you so much for your time and consideration. Together we got this.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
City Clerk Wetmore, is there anyone else on the line who would like to speak on COVID-19 efforts?
No, there is not.
Okay, then I'll go ahead and close public comment and open up item 7. This is community comments and suggestions. This is the time for you to call in and make comments on items that are not on this agenda. The public call-in number is 833-493-5844. And City Clerk Wetmore, is there anyone on the line who would like to speak on item 7 tonight?
No, there are no new callers.
Okay, why don't we give it just a few seconds and see if anybody pops in. And hearing nobody popping in, I'll go ahead. I'm going to leave item 7 open through item 8 just in case there's people who are trying to get on. So I'll close public comment for items 7 and 8 at the same time. So that takes us forward to item 8. This is our consent agenda. This includes items on the agenda numbered 8A through 8F. And public, if you'd like to comment on any of these items, the number is 833-493-5844. Is there anyone who would like to ask a question or pull an item for separate consideration?
Excuse me. I'll go real quick. Mayor Pro Tem Stornin, I just have a comment on 8B.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Councilmember Paulding?
Yes, I just had a question for staff on item 8F.
8F?
That's correct.
Okay. And for everyone, don't forget to mute your mics when we're not speaking. Let's go ahead and go to item 8B. I, too, had a comment there, but I'm going to take a wild guess that mine matches Mayor Pro Tem. So, Mayor Pro Tem, go ahead and make your comment about 8B, and then we'll go on to the question about 8F.
Thank you. 8B is the consideration of our side letter for the agreement with the Rio Grande Police Officers Association regarding their contract for the next year, where they approached the city and said they were willing to continue the next year as a status quo contract, which is just a breath of fresh air that they would come forward and acknowledge our current emotional and physical and financial situation that's going on in front of us as not only a community but as a country and a world, and that they took it upon themselves to just put forward a status quo budget in these difficult times. And I just wanted to tell them publicly thank you for presenting that and doing that, and we're hoping that we can all work through this together, but appreciate that they extended it for 1 year while we try to figure out all the other things that are going on. So thank you, Mayor.
Thank you very much. This is Mayor Ray Russom, and I was going to say the same thing. I will add that I reached out to the president of the Police Officers Association, and his response to me was that they understand that these are challenging times for the city, and they just want to do what they can to help out. So that is a direct quote, and I'm greatly appreciative. This is a really good indication to the public of how good the relationship is between the city and our public service personnel, public safety personnel. So thank you so much. Councilmember Paulding, go ahead and ask your question on 8F.
Yes, and I'd like to echo that said by our mayor and Mayor Pro Tem, with a big thanks to the POA. My question on 8F is with regard to the Verdin marketing contract. First, I want to acknowledge the great work that they've done. Second, it looks like it's a $1,500 amendment, and I think the staff report spoke to it being necessary in order to make some changes to the website, and I wasn't sure what those changes were, so I was wondering if we had clarification on that.
Thank you, Mayor Ray Russom, and Councilmember Paulding. This is Bill Robeson, Acting City Manager. The website, as far as I understand, they are changing it to add the persona information and more marketing, more data mining that they've done, and they're going to incorporate that into the website once again, and the amount of hits and things like that. I'm not an expert on web design, but it's improvement in that area, and they've been very successful with us. They've increased the amount of traffic that we've had on our dedicated website, and they're going to keep that effort going. Jocelyn Brandon is on the line. I don't want to just put her on the spot, but I know that she works with them on on a constant basis, so she might have some information to share on that topic.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Ashley. Did you have some information you wanted to share, Jocelyn?
I just wanted to let you know that I am on the line. Jocelyn Bennon with South County Chambers and Ashley Akers from Virgin Marketing is also on the line. If you've visited the visitarroyogrande.org website, it's very slow, so there needs to be some improvements made there. And then also it's a .org, which doesn't seem, you know, like that big of a deal in general, but when people search organically for tourism and to visit Arroyo Grande, people usually search for a .com, and so we would like to also purchase the URL for the visitarroyogrande.com.
Okay, excellent. And I think the last update that you services were going to be put on hold to some extent, but this would be a change that just needs to be made now. Is that correct?
Correct. Currently, you know, non-essential travel is not encouraged, and so our advertising has been put on hold, which will be a cost savings that will roll into the fund balance. But the website itself has not been upgraded ever, so it's ready for infrastructure on the back end to make it faster, more user friendly, and then also to purchase the URL.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that clarification. Those are all my questions on this item, Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I want to encourage the public to call in and ask questions. Again, the number is 833-493-5844. City Clerk Wetmore, is there anybody on the line who would like to speak on item 8?
Yes, we have one caller, Julie Tucker. Julie, you're on the line.
Good evening. I am Julie Tucker, and I'm speaking to item 8B, and that is the agreement with the Police Officers Association and the continuing of the same status of last year's contract. And I would like to mirror the comments made by Mayor Pro Tem Thornton in that this is a very nice thing that they're doing. I'd like to kind of lead into public comment in that the Five Cities Fire Authority is not as considerate. The agreement with the fire union is in front of the board on Friday. The fire authority is poised to increase the contract by 2% and give $1,000 retroactive pay to all represented employees. And I think your council should have a chat about that. Unfortunately, time is of the essence, but wanted you all to know about that. So thank you very much, and that's my comment.
Thank you. City Clerk Whitmore, anyone else to comment on item 8?
No, there's not.
Okay. Would anyone like to make a motion about the consent agenda item?
Mayor Pro Tem Thornton, all
moves. And I would move for approval of items 8A through 8F.
Mayor Pro Tem Thornton, second.
Any discussion? Can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Thornton?
Yes.
Councilmember Paulding?
Yes.
Councilmember George?
Yes.
And Mayor Ray Russom?
Yes. And going backwards to, before we go on to with the rest of the agenda, I want to go back and make sure that there's no one on the line who would like to speak on item 7, public comment. City Clerk Wetmore, did anybody add in since then?
No callers.
Okay, great. So I will close public comment on both item 7 and item 8. For public hearings tonight, item 9, we have none. So that takes us to item 10, old business. And this is consideration of further adjustments to fiscal year 1920. And we're going to invite Director Stevens on the line. But before I open it up,
I do want to thank Director Stevens because this item is came out of research he did based on our last conversation of his own volition after the public meeting to make sure that the question was fully answered. And I just want to acknowledge and commend Director Stevens for taking that initiative and chasing this down and just say how pleased I am with his diligence in this item. So, Director Stevens.
Well, thank you. Hello, Mayor Rusum and council members. I'm Mike Stevens, the Director of Administrative Services. This evening I'm bringing to you item 10A, which is the consideration of further adjustments to the fiscal year 1920 budget based on new information that was discovered since the April 28th council meeting. At the April 28th council meeting, I presented you with various short-term budget balancing strategies, which identified approximately $1 million worth of expenditure savings. And this was to offset the $1.2 million revenue shortfall as a result of impacts due to the coronavirus. It was at that meeting, it was also recommended that the remaining $207,000 shortfall, and this is the amount not identified through the expenditure savings that we identified, would be achieved by reducing a contingency reserve or contingency reserve from 5 to 4%. So at that meeting, your council directed staff to move forward with these short-term budget balancing strategies and the additional 1% draw on the contingent reserves to address this year's fiscal budget gap. So as part of the discussion at the meeting, a number of questions were directed by council, and one question in particular was regarding a specific line item in the 1920 budget described only as expenditure savings, and this was in the amount of $440,000. The specific question was whether this amount was included as part of our overall savings calculated. And my response to the question at the meeting was that this amount was included as part of the total estimated savings. But in review of my response following the meeting or the next day, it was discovered that the amount was not actually factored into the calculation and therefore would add to our estimated shortfall, unfortunately, this year. Initially, my response to council's question was based on the assumption that the $440,000 described only as expenditure savings was already factored into our adjusted budget. The adjusted budget was used as a comparison to our current forecast to calculate the impact of our budget balancing strategies. However, the line item, expenditure savings, while listed in our biennial budget document, was never updated in our financial system and didn't appear in any of our financial reports, which were used as the basis for our calculations. And that's where we were at fault. So, as I mentioned, staff's recommendation at the last council meeting was to reduce the 5% contingency reserves by 1% to address $207,000 of the shortfall. If we reduce the contingency reserve by a little over 2%, this would bring the overall reserve balance to around 2% and would add the additional funding to close the budget gap this fiscal year. So staff is recommending to use additional contingency reserves in the current year to address the additional shortfall. And I'm here to answer questions that you might have, and you probably will have some questions.
Thank you very much, Director Stevens. Mayor Pro Tem, do you have any questions?
Yes, I do. Thank you. Thank you, Director Stevens, and I do appreciate the diligence in looking for this and going further and finding it. It's an unfortunate find, but at least it's something we can contend and deal with. Moving forward, obviously there was a problem that occurred in order for the staff, and moving forward, is there a mechanism or something that's going to take place now to help us not incur this problem in the future?
Yes. This is Mike Stevens again. Yeah, I would, moving forward, when we have adjustments, these adjustments need to be entered into our financial system. So when we budget, I suggest we wouldn't use kind of a plug number called expenditure savings. And in the future, we would identify what those savings actually would be, and then we would enter that information into our financial system so that our budget ties to our financial system, so that as we run reports, we're, you know, making sure that all of our numbers are in sync. So I'll guarantee you that that's going to take place in the future.
Okay, thank you. And then just one more question. We went from 5 to 4. Now we're going to be at, I think, 1.9% of our contingency reserve. As we look at creating our next year's budget, are we looking to fill that gap to get back up to 5, or do you have any idea on that at the moment?
Yeah, we're working on the budget. This is Mike Stevens again. We're working on the budget now, and part of the presentation we do to you will be able to tell you what the, you know, what it's going to take to get us back to the 5%. So as we roll up the budget, we'll be, as part of the discussion, we'll talk about whether or not you as a council want to maintain the 5% contingency, or are you comfortable with a lower amount. It really depends on, you know, what, when we finally roll up the numbers, where we're at, you know. So yes, we are planning to bring back to you in the upcoming 2021 budget what the cost would be in order to bring us back to the 5% contingency.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's all I had as far as questions.
Thank you. Councilmember Paulding, any questions?
Thank you. This is Councilmember Paulding. I just have one quick question. When we look at the reconciliation process that you're going through, and we'll continue to go through, I'm sure you'll do that with our other revenue sources as well. For example, sales tax, Measure 06, et cetera. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, actually, I lied. I said I had one question. I have one other follow-up question, and that would be this $440,000 line item. Was it derived from a number of specific adjustments or items that were identified as savings over time, or was it a kind of a placeholder function that was due to one specific forecasted savings?
Mike Stevens again. I honestly don't know. Predecessor, when we adopted the budget, the line item, I went back to look at the presentation back in 2018 when our biannual budget was presented, and there was no discussion about this amount. So I'm guessing that at some point the decision was that we felt that there was going to be some savings within the current 2 years, because there was one also for the fiscal year 18-19 and 19-20. There was a similar amount. So I'm assuming that it was just more or less identified as, you know, during the year we're going to have to find this additional amount, but it was never identified and entered into our system as to what our financial system as to what this amount was going to make up or would it be made up of. Maybe the assumption was salary savings. I'm not exactly sure.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate that clarification. And again, thank you for your diligence in tracking this down and bringing it to our attention. Those are all my questions. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Councilmember George, any questions?
I think we just actually, I just saw her drop off. Hold on. Are you there,
Councilmember? Okay, let's give it a moment.
Are you there, Councilmember George?
I'm here. I hit the hang up button instead of the unmute button. I apologize.
Okay.
It's just big and red and shiny. Thank you. I apologize for disconnecting and coming back on. Thank you, Director Stevens, for taking my call yesterday on this item. I had a lot of questions, and you were able to answer them all for me. So I wanted to just ask you to clarify some of the things you clarified for me, because I think that it'd be helpful for the public. We have a general reserve and a contingency reserve. Could you explain the difference so that the public is aware that we're not going to end up with a 1.9% general reserve, that a reserve is actually bigger, but the contingency reserve is different?
Yes, Mike Stevens, Director of Administrative Services. Yeah, that's a great question. So our policy, our budget policy, recommends that we maintain a 20% or a 20%, we don't have to maintain it, they suggest a 20% general fund reserve, fund balance available. Within that is a contingency reserve of 5%. So you've got 20%, and now within that amount is 5% for contingency reserves. The contingency reserves are set up to for unexpected, unanticipated revenue shortfalls or unanticipated large expenditures whatever the case, it's for unanticipated kinds of situations, exactly what we're in with this coronavirus right now. It's a perfect time to use contingency reserves. This is what they are built for. So overall, we've got this 20%. Within the 20% is 5% for the contingency reserve, and that's what we're discussing and talking about, reducing down to 2%. So right now we sit at about, 18%, and using the 3% would take us down to 15 overall general reserve.
Thank you for that. And I know that Mayor Pro Tem asked about budgeting for increasing that back up. Do you have a rough idea of time frame as to how long it would take for us to bring our reserve back up to an acceptable level? 18%, 20%, whatever that is?
I don't. This is Mike Stevens again. I don't know. It's really up to you as a council. You know, if it's 3%, you could say, let's try to work this over the next 3 years, and we'll try to increase our, 1% per year. Now, 1% is about $200,000. So if we were in a situation where we felt, we think we can come up with the $400,000, maybe then we increase it by 2%. It's really going to be kind of your call. I'll be able to present the information and make a recommendation. But, I mean, for me, if the money's there and we are able to, I'd like to bring that up to the 20% the next budget cycle. If it doesn't, I think you have to weigh that against what the impact of reduced services or, potential layoffs or mandatory time off or those kinds of budget balancing strategies that would reduce fiscal debt.
This is the acting city manager, Bill Robeson. If I could just add a little bit to that. We'll be looking at that. We definitely want to make sure that we are keeping an eye on that contingency balance and trying to increase that over the coming years, each year. And just like Director Stevens said, we'd be looking at all these factors of how to save money throughout the year in a few capacities, but we're also going to be watching the economy. That's a big factor that's going to kind of direct us in how we can save or how we can react to certain things, economic impacts, et cetera. So we're going to take all those things, but we'll keep giving you updates on what those numbers look like and what the economic impacts and those numbers look like. And then with all that backdrop, we'll give you some options and indicators and numbers that we can show you to give you options on whether or not we can increase that contingency or remain the same and what those the impacts of service levels are. So thank you.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that answer. I'm concerned about the $439,000 expenditure savings and not knowing what that was to. It was under my, I was under the impression that that was a salary savings that we were realizing. But Director Stevens, are you saying you don't know what the expenditure savings are of two, and so we just have a line item that says $439,000, but there's no definition as to why it's there?
This is Mike Stevens. Yes, I don't know. I mean, if it was salary savings and assumed to be salary savings, I think at the time then you would have, and that you would have adjusted the budget to reduce your salary savings appropriations as part of your budget adjustments so that it reflects a reduction in salary savings. That was never done. There were no adjustments made for this amount. That's part of the problem of why it wasn't identified and it wasn't inputted into the financial system as an adjustment, and so it wasn't in the numbers, the final numbers.
And so that's something that you'll fix for the next budget. We won't have that issue moving forward.
Yes, that's correct. If it were me, I would identify what that expenditure savings is and build that directly into the budget as opposed to just identifying expenditure savings. Now, if you were to do that, that is one approach, I guess, but I would think that within the year or during the budget cycle that you would identify what that should be so that you can track to it. The whole purpose of a budget is to be able to track to your expenditures. Identifying what that savings is a good way, and then building it into the budget is the way that you would track it on a regular basis.
Okay. Thank you very much. Those were my questions.
Thank you. Councilmember Barnidge, any questions?
I do. I have one. I had a couple, but actually all the council members asked the same question or very similar, so thank you for all of that. I had a good conversation with Director Stevens last week just to sort of go through this, and so I appreciate him taking the time to go through it with me, and I also appreciate going forward that we will kind of fine-tune this so we know exactly what is called out that the savings is. The only question I have left is, and I asked a similar question last, I guess 2 weeks ago it would be when we first looked at this item, the contingency reserves 5% that's set aside to protect against these unexpected or unforeseen losses like COVID, I don't think you have the answer now, but if you could find out when in the past, and it might have been years and years ago, but I'd just like to know when is the last time that we could dip into that and use it since we are taking it down a bit. And if you don't have an answer now, that's fine, but that's my only question. Thank you.
Go ahead, Mike.
Okay, thanks. I'll look to see. I don't know. I don't have the answer to that, but I can look into it to see.
Yeah, and I would just add that, Bill Robeson, in recent memory, I know I've only been here about 3 years. We haven't had any contingency money used, so we'll look back, just like Mike said, and we'll find out when the last time we dipped into that fund was, and we'll get back to you on that.
Okay, thank you both very much.
Thank you, and my question has been answered because that's the generation of this staff report, but Director Stevens, I did ask you a question last week with regard to maybe if you could expand our discussion just a little bit in talking about the Eden system, and I asked you about the cost to upgrade the Eden system, so I wonder if that might be a good time to talk about why there's some challenges for you in finding these answers based on the software that we have.
Yes, this is Mike Stevens. Again, Yes, our conversation, we got into discussion about Eden, which is our financial system software. It pretty much runs our financial system, accounts payable, general ledger, fund balance, and all, and those types of tracking. It's an older system. It's, I can't remember how long, but how old it is. I think it's over 10 years.
20.
And they're actually 20, is it? Okay,
yes.
20 years. And it's coming to the end of life, and they're not even going to support it in the future. So your question, Mayor, was, you know, what's our plan moving forward? And we did budget some money in the current budget, 1920 budget, around $350,000 to replace the system. I know that back in 2018 they were talking about replacing the system, our financial system, and we keep moving the funds from year to year, but they just haven't had the chance or the staffing or the capacity to replace the financial system. It's a pretty big effort to replace your financial system. Not to say that we can't do it and we should be doing it. The other thing in replacing the financial system, there's always this timing of when to do it. You don't want to do it at year end. You don't typically want to do it when you're developing your budget. There's always a window or a period that it's optimal to replace a financial system. And so we've had this discussion recently about, you know, we know we need to move forward with this. I think our plan, we're going to come up with a plan here shortly on looking at when is the best time to start to get back into discussions about replacing the system. I don't know. I'm going to have to research if we've done an RFP on various financial systems. I know that this Eden product that we have right now, there is, they were purchased by another company that has maybe a more robust system, financial system. So we definitely want to be able to take a look at that. It might be a cheaper alternative to just switch over to their new system. And that's probably part of the reason, or it's not, it's probably the reason why they're not supporting that anymore. They have a new and improved system, or they're trying to move us over to this new system. Some of the difficulties with this current system, especially on the reporting side, it's difficult to, and it's somewhat new to me. I'm just starting to learn it, so I don't have all the background as to, you know, the difficulty of using the system. But I just know from a reporting side, reports are very difficult to get out of the system. There are some basic reports that we can get, but we don't have the flexibility to do a lot of ad hoc kinds of reporting where if we have specific analysis that we need, we have to use the existing canned reports that are in the system. So that limits us in a number of situations on doing ad hoc kind of analysis in this. That's, I think, probably one of the bigger reasons. You know, I do think it's good in the sense that it serves its purpose for now, but there are a lot of things that we're looking to do with an upgraded system that, you know, I think moving towards this new system will allow us to be more efficient.
Thank you very much for that. And I do recall that last year we had some issues with Eden and specifically with how it does, and I'm going to be talking about things that I don't know right now, but the general ledger on the inside of it that had to be untangled from years and years and years of basically just the Eden software's shortcomings. So, Director Stevens, I just want to thank you for your perseverance in coming into a system that there was no real way you could have come in with a working knowledge of a system that's two decades old, and on behalf of the city, I apologize for putting you through that, and I hope that we can get a more robust system here that reflects the modern needs of a municipality, and especially with all of the fiscal number crunching that we're going to have to be doing and running scenarios in the next, you know, the coming year or so. So thank you for that. Let's go ahead and open up public comment. So, again, the number is 833-493-5844. And City Clerk Wetmore, is there anyone waiting on the line to speak on item 10A?
No, there is not.
Okay, then I will close public comment and bring it back around to the council and for discussion and direction to staff. So, again, following the order that I was going in before, Councilmember Storton, comments or ideas?
No, thank you, Mayor. I appreciate that. I really do appreciate the effort and particularly just the honesty and transparency of this discussion. It was unfortunate that it happened, but I'm so glad we're able to vet it out in our public discussion. And know we have something to deal with, and we will take care of it moving forward. As far as upgrading the system, I'm really comfortable with Director Stevens and have been really impressed with his analysis and ability to share information with us, and I'm certain we'll find something that's going to be adequate for the city that's going to meet our needs. So I'll be voting to approve the staff's recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Paulding?
Yes, thank you. I will echo Mayor Pro Tem's comments, and it's an unfortunate situation to be in, but we're doing the hard work, and I do appreciate the level of analysis. And again, your staff reports, Mike, are very well laid out, and that's always a breath of fresh air reading them, so I appreciate that very much. I too will support staff's recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember George?
Thank you, Mayor. Director Stevens, again, I would like to thank you for taking the time to speak with me yesterday. You are light in our tunnel right now, especially when it comes to finances and numbers and being in the environment that we're in, knowing that we have someone like you and our team to help us get through this and to be able to go through all of these numbers it helps us sleep at night. And I appreciate you being here, and I appreciate you coming into our city at a very tough time. Thank you for the staff report. It was very thorough. I, too, am ready to move forward with this item, and I will support moving forward, hopefully in the very near future, with some sort of software that will make your life easier. And those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Barnidge?
Thank you. I am ready to move forward with staff's recommendations, and I'll just join in the current City Council love fest for Director Stevens. I appreciate his hard work and the suggestions of how we're going to move forward, and thank you very much.
And with that, hearing a concurrence of the council, I will go ahead and move that we utilize additional contingency reserves to address the projected fiscal year 1920 budget shortfall.
Second.
Councilmember Barnett seconds that.
Okay. Any discussion? City Clerk Wetmore, can we get a roll call, please?
Mayor Ray Russom?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Councilmember Paulding?
Yes.
Councilmember George?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Storton?
Yes.
Thank you very much. We have no item 11 tonight, so that takes us to council communications. Item 12, I'm always going to look to Councilmember Barnidge first. Councilmember Barnidge, anything for council communications?
Nothing this evening.
I'm sorry, could you please put Councilmember Barnidge on the line? Just kidding. Anyone else have council communications tonight?
This is Councilmember George. I just wanted to briefly touch on the Five Cities Fire Authority, the MOU that is going to be coming before the committee on Friday. And I wanted to just have council maybe discuss or just keep in mind that if the cost is going to be over $10,000, especially in this time, I would highly recommend that Mayor Pro Tem Thornton keep us apprised as to the expenditures or possible expenditures prior to making a decision, if that's possible. This is my only communication.
This is Councilmember Thornton.
Go ahead.
I was just going to respond to that. We do have a meeting on Friday where that will be part of the discussion, and I don't have any further information on it at this point, but as I do, I'll find out what I can or cannot provide until I discover that our meeting on that date.
Councilmember Paulding here. I just have a question on that. As a reminder or refresher, because the Faculty Spire Authority is a JPA comprised of three agencies, when there are costs, important cost decisions that relate to each agency, what is our process? Obviously, in addition to having Mayor Pro Tem as our appointee and delegate on the Five Cities Fire Authority Board, when there are important decisions like that to be made, is there a process that loops our council in, or how does that work in practice? Maybe that's a question for our city attorney or manager.
This is City Attorney Tim Carmel. I have no idea, candidly.
This is Mayor Ray Ressam. Yes, we have policy in place there, so perhaps the City Attorney can find a copy of that policy. There is a dollar threshold for that, so perhaps you can email the council as a refresher.
Yeah, it is in our City Council handbook. That document is on our website, and I can forward that to the council and to the city attorney.
This is Council Member George. The Council Member Handbook 5.6A says that when time permits, prior to an item scheduled to be voted on by the board or committee that a member of the City Council has been appointed to by the City Council, City Council members are advised to place items on the City Council agenda for direction and or input if they meet any of the following criteria. And line item I says items that will result in a one-time or annual direct financial impact of the city of over $10,000.
Any other council communication?
Can I just
Mayor Ray
Whitney McDonald? I apologize for jumping out of turn. This is your acting deputy city manager, Chief Steve Lieberman has called back in to the meeting, and so if a question needs to be directed to him regarding Five Cities Fire Authority, he is also on the line now.
Let's go ahead and bring Chief Lieberman on.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Steve Lieberman, Fire Chief, Five Cities Fire Authority. I'm sorry I missed the initial public comment, but I've been monitoring the council meeting over slow span and thought I'd call back in. And would love to give you some background and some structure, if the council would like.
Tim, is that okay tonight, or should we agendize this?
I think we're getting, this is Tim Carmel, City Attorney. I think we're getting a little deep into it. I think it's probably better to agendize it.
City Attorney, can I just make a blanket statement about this year's budget and what was included in it?
Absolutely.
Okay, let me try a different tack, Mayor. And I'm sorry, there's a 8-month-old puppy in my house. Let me go outside. The budget for the Five Cities Fire Authority is required to be approved unanimously by all parties. The Memorandum of Agreement, the second draft amendment, has done that, not just for this year, but for next year. It's important for you to know that this 2% increase that's going to the board on Friday was already approved and placed into the budget. The negotiations started after the contract had expired, and unfortunately during negotiations, I don't think any of us anticipated this pandemic. But again, that 2% was already in the budget. It's not new money that's coming from the communities.
Thank you for that, Chief. Any other council communications? Okay, hearing none, that takes takes us to item 13. City Attorney Carmel, can you please announce the closed session?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. City Attorney Tim Carmel. The council will now adjourn to closed session to consider agenda item 13A, conference with legal counsel, anticipated litigation, significant exposure to litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9D2, one potential case involving former city manager Jim Bergman's employment with the city.
Thank you. And I'll go ahead and open this up to public comment. The number is 833-493-5844. City Clerk Wetmore, is there anyone on the line who wants to comment on item 13?
No, there is not.
Okay, then we'll go ahead and close public comment, and we will adjourn. And just as a reminder, announcements of any reportable actions taken in closed session will be made at the beginning of the next regular City Council meeting, as this meeting is not recorded or videotaped. So thank you very much, everyone. Don't forget that we do have an special meeting next week that is only COVID-related, and we will, at this time, adjourn to closed session. Thank you so much.